All right, our next speaker led a really dynamic session on the war on women earlier today, and it's my great pleasure to introduce her again. She got her start in politics in the early 1990s when David Duke ran for the governor of Louisiana. Terry O'Neill went door to door to get out the vote against David Duke. She taught feminist legal theory, international women's rights law, corporate law, and legal ethics at Tulane and the University of California, and has been part of the organization, the National Organization for Women, and its leadership for many, many years. But she made it her full-time job in 2009. And as part of what she did when she took over the National Organization for Women and became part of its leadership was to re-energize that organization. According to Washington Post, with her strategy of tapping into the energy and outrage of women all over the country, over all the ground that we lost during the Bush administration, she really created a new burst of activism within this existing organization. And I think this is a model for all of us in the progressive movement. We have these great organizations. Some of them have gone to sleep a little bit, but there is this huge potential there, this huge grassroots energy, and nowhere is that more evident than in the war on women. So without further ado, I give you Terry O'Neill.
Thank you so much, Ruth. Thank you, Ed Garvey, for inviting me to be here. I am thrilled to be talking to you all. I do want to talk about the war on women, and I think it's important for people to understand, first and foremost, the war on women really has at least three fronts. It is not merely a war on women's reproductive rights, although it is that. It is also a war on women's economic security. It is also a war on women's ability to be protected from physical violence. Make no mistake, the 2010 elections were even more disastrous for women than we thought they were when they happened 2 years ago. After Citizens United, the first federal election to follow Citizens United was 2010, and what happened? Tea Party extremists flooded into the United States Congress and flooded into states like Wisconsin and Michigan and Indiana and Florida and Pennsylvania. You know, just coincidentally, those are swing states for 2012. The Tea Party extremists, funded by the likes of David Koch and pushed by the likes of Dick Armey and Karl Rove, is a radical right-wing initiative. And who did they go after first? They went after the women. The entire 112th Congress, for 2 years of the 112th Congress, this is the kind of thing that we have seen. Let me talk first about women's economic security. The Romney-Ryan budget, right? What does the Romney-Ryan budget do? This is the budget plan created by Paul Ryan. I forgive you. But you know, he's from here. I'd really rather he just come back here and stay. Oh no, you don't want him either, right? What the Romney-Ryan budget would do first, it converts Medicare to a private voucher system that will end up costing seniors over $6,000 per year more for health care than what they currently pay. This has a very disproportionate impact on women. Women utilize Medicare more often than men. Women have more chronic conditions than men, especially after the age of 65. And women have less money in their pockets at the end of their working life after a lifetime of unequal pay. Where are they going to get that $6,000? Paul Ryan says that he's going to save Medicare by turning it into a private voucher system. He also says that we shouldn't worry about it because he won't privatize Medicare until 2023. So current seniors would continue to have the whatever plan they have. But what he doesn't tell you is that he's got a plan to repeal the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, so that seniors would immediately see their health care costs going back up after we appeal Obamacare. Right? That's why we call him Lion Paul Ryan. Right? The Romney-Ryan budget would also convert Medicaid to a state block grant program and drastically reduce the amount of federal money going into the state. So it doesn't really matter how sick you get. If you're a low-income person and you're eligible for Medicaid, it doesn't really matter how sick you get. The federal government sends so many dollars to each state, period, the end. After that, you're on your own. The Romney-Ryan budget also takes Social Security and puts it on a fast track for future benefit cuts, changes the way we do budgets every year so that Social Security could be cut easily, quickly, and Congress wouldn't be able to stop it. And then the Romney-Ryan budget takes an entire range of social programs. These are things that are socially productive for this country. It's Head Start. It's family planning clinics. It's Pell Grants that allow kids to go to school and afford the tuition. It's after school programs so that moms and dads who are working can know their kids will be safe after 2:30 when school lets out. All of these things would be defunded significantly under the Romney-Ryan budget. And do we squeeze down the federal budget deficit by making all these cuts? No. The entire savings from all of these cuts, the Medicare, the Medicaid, the Social Security, and all of the social programs, all of that savings goes for increased spending on the military and enhanced tax breaks for corporations and billionaires. Right. And women bear the brunt of all of this. Those social programs that are socially productive, they not only disproportionately serve women, they are also disproportionately employing women. Just to take Medicaid as an example, half of Medicaid dollars go to support nursing homes in this country. Half of Medicaid dollars support nursing homes in this country. And thousands will be shut down if the Ryan Romney plan to gut Medicaid were to pass. Thousands, right? Who lives in nursing homes? 70% of the residents of nursing homes are women. And equally importantly, the vast majority of the workers in nursing homes are women. So grandma gets kicked out, and she has to go somewhere. Where is she going to go? And the women who are working have lost those jobs, and where are they going to go? It's absolutely astonishing that Paul Ryan actually has been called a serious person with serious ideas about fixing our economy. Not. The war on women has also taken aim at women's ability to be protected against violence in their own homes. The Violence Against Women Act was passed in the mid-1990s. It was a tough uphill battle to get the Violence Against Women Act passed, but it did pass. And ever since the 1990s, every time it comes up for reauthorization, it has been passed with flying colors, almost unanimously, in a very bipartisan way, until the 112th Congress. The Violence Against Women Act is really very simple. It provides services to victims and survivors of domestic violence, dating violence, sexual assault, and stalking. It provides services to survivors and holds perpetrators accountable. Pretty simple. Right. This year, the Senate passed an inclusive version of reauthorization of the Violence Against Women Act. Inclusive because it pays attention to underserved populations, Native American women, who are very often assaulted by non-Native men on tribal lands, and the tribal authorities don't have jurisdiction to prosecute non-Native individuals living on those tribal lands or committing crimes of violence on those lands. So the Senate bill addresses that. The Senate bill addresses the needs of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender victims who report at a rate of 80% that they cannot access services for domestic violence. The Senate version also provides measures for immigrant women who may find themselves being battered by their sponsor and need to be able to get off the track where their sponsor is controlling their immigration papers and get onto a track where they control their own immigration papers. The Senate bill deals with that. Also provides better services for women on college campuses who are sexually assaulted. Over in the House, Speaker John Boehner decided that he was having none of all of this inclusive stuff. And he engineered passage of a bill that is so bad that he could only force it through on a basically party line vote. 23 brave Republicans voted against it because it doesn't contain any of these protections for underserved populations. And in fact, with respect to immigrant women, it actually put in provisions that may put them more at risk. It provided for early notice to sponsors of immigrant women who are battering the women they're sponsoring. We are now stuck in a procedural loop where John Boehner is refusing to take up the bipartisan inclusive Senate version of the Violence Against Women Act simply because he doesn't want to give the Democrats a win on inclusive policies. Right. Okay, and finally we get to women's reproductive health care needs. The very first thing that the 112th Congress did in the House of Representatives was go after Planned Parenthood. Right? Planned Parenthood, which provides contraceptives, mammograms, cervical cancer screenings. Planned Parenthood, who for some low-income women is the only doctor they see once a year to get their annual checkups. Planned Parenthood, which provides safe and medically appropriate abortions for women when they come in exercising their constitutional right to it. Planned Parenthood, this is the target of the brave Tea Partiers who come to Congress to fix the economy. Okay. H.R. 1 provided defunding for all family planning clinics. And let's just pause for a moment. Family planning, contraception. Right? This H.R. 1 was a continuing resolution to fund the entire government. It contained a provision to defund Title X family planning clinics. Think back to the days when women did not have access to reliable contraception, and they had 10 or 15 or 20 pregnancies and childbirths in their lifetime, and women died young, and they lived sick, not like today, because we have access to contraception, right? But oh no, the 112th Congress, the radical fringe that now controls the Republican Party in the House of Representatives wants to go after family planning. They also voted on a bill to shut down both private and public insurance for abortion care. And you know, one in three women will have an abortion by the age of 45. One in three by the age of 45. It's a common and necessary aspect of women's reproductive health care. There was another bill put into the 112th Congress that would give a conscience clause to publicly funded hospitals that would allow a hospital to stand by and allow a pregnant woman to die rather than perform a life-saving abortion. This is in the United States Congress. This is really what we're up to. Meanwhile, at the state level, the Tea Party extremists pushing for anti-reproductive rights bills passed nearly 100 laws, passed and signed into law, nearly 100 of them in 2011 alone, shattering the prior record of 2005 when only something like 32 or 35 anti-abortion measures were passed. These include ultrasound, mandatory ultrasounds that a woman must undergo before she can have an abortion, for no medical reason whatsoever, not medically indicated, and the only purpose of that exercise is to humiliate and embarrass her. But there's hope. There is hope. First, remember Susan G. Komen for The Cure? And Susan G. Komen announced that it was going to defund Planned Parenthood. We don't want Planned Parenthood providing mammograms anymore for Susan G. Komen, Race for the Cure. The reaction by women through Facebook and Twitter and in other methods was so huge, Susan G. Komen's funding went down by 30% this year. And if they don't start depoliticizing breast cancer, they will not exist in 5 years. Remember Rush Limbaugh? You know, his national advertisers don't remember him either. They're all gone.
When Governor Bob McDonnell was presiding over a Virginia legislature considering mandatory ultrasound for women seeking abortions, 1,500 people, men and women, stood in a gauntlet, in a silent vigil, a huge long line leading to the House of Delegates in Richmond, Virginia, that all of the delegates had to walk past as they filed into the building to cast their vote on that ultrasound bill. 1,500 people just showed up in Richmond to protest this outrage. And finally, women legislators are stepping up and proposing important legislation. As Senator Nina Turner of Ohio has said, we want to show the men the love. And therefore, a number of women have proposed laws that before a man can access Viagra or other erectile dysfunction medication, he must undergo a rectal exam, a digital rectal exam. A heart stress test. He must produce an affidavit from his sexual partner attesting to the fact that, yes, he does need this medication. In one state, he must view a film that graphically describes what could go wrong if he uses this medication. And in another state, he must undergo counseling about the advantages of a celibate lifestyle. And who says feminists don't have a sense of humor? So what can we do? Well, we take our sense of humor, we take our passion, we take our outrage at this war on women, and we take it door to door. We elect officials who will be champions for women's rights. We send Tammy Baldwin to the United States Senate. And we hold the elected officials accountable after they're elected. We re-elect Barack Obama and Joe Biden, and we hold them accountable after they're re-elected. We talk to our neighbors, we talk to our friends, we talk to our families, we send letters to the editor, we write op-eds for our local newspapers. We get the word out about, A, what's at stake for women in these elections. We will not let the Tea Party, despite all their billions, take over our lives. And B, we need to look to the long run. After this election, we will be holding the electeds accountable, whoever they are. We will be rising up continually because we have the information and we have the people on our side, and that's how we're going to win. Thank you so much.